Right, it's time for the Israel Report. Today we are chatting to Eli Cohen, a journalist and an author, and we're going to be discussing all things making news in Israel today. Eli, thanks for being with me on Chai FM.
My pleasure.
I want to start with a headline on the Times of Israel. It's fascinating because I spoke to Lieutenant Colonel Hirsch yesterday about the Saudi civilian nuclear program, which Trump was apparently going to provide unconditionally. That apparently has changed. According to the Times of Israel, Trump says that the Saudi civilian nuclear pact is conditioned upon normalization with Israel. I mean, if that is in fact true, that's a major change from the news that was being discussed yesterday.
There's an interesting thing that's been going on with Saudi Arabia for the past couple years, and that is that supposedly behind the scenes they were open to being part of the Abraham Accords and coming out, you know, publicly as being connected with Israel. And somehow they always seem to dance around and out of that circle. And, you know, I think it kind of shows two things. Number one, that they're not too inclined to do that at the end of the day for all the changes that he's trying to bring about in the kingdom. And number two, we see that Saudi Arabia at the end of the day is not as brave, let's say, as the Emirates are insofar as taking a stance and going forward with it. You know, like on one hand, they behind the scenes tell America, yeah, go hit Iran. And then when they see it's not really working as much as they thought, then all of a sudden they flip course again. So if you want to be generous, you could say that they're cautious. And if you want to be a little less generous, you could say that they're a little bit less brave about the way they
good choice
it.
Of words. Interesting. How do you see things playing out between them and the Houthis? Apparently there's a marine blockade. Apparently a tanker of theirs was hit today. Do you think they're going to take up arms and do something significant against the Houthis, or you don't see that happening because
it's a good question. Let's put it there. It's a good question. In the past, they had some serious altercations with the Houthis, and the Houthis did some significant damage to their oil infrastructure. And the ongoing thing, you know, it wasn't that Saudi Arabia would figure such a big, rich country would be able just to crush them like a bug, and that's not what happened. Maybe the opposite even. So they're kind of wary, I think, about getting too enmeshed with them unless they feel that they have a serious partner like the U.S. who's going to come in and really, you know, bash them. So I think that's what the situation is. You know, you don't really see Saudi Arabia leading the charge, you know, towards anything. And, you know, they're always kind of playing in the back and seeing what happens, you know, and all that. They're not the front running.
Yeah. Eli, I can hear your American accent, so we kind of can work out that you are an Ole from the U.S. I don't think America's exactly covered itself in glory in the way they've handled this thing. I think if I was the leader of Saudi Arabia, looking at an MOU that was signed without my input at all, I'm massively vulnerable with a super powerful enemy right across the strait. I've seen how little America is going to support me. Maybe I'd also be paying both sides if I had to. I just think it's realpolitik, and America is to a certain extent to blame. What do you think of my take on of issues?
That's true. That's true. However, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you have to take a side. Like Saudi Arabia has American air bases, but by the same token, they kind of curb them from being used in this. You know, actually, if you look at almost all the air bases in America, American air bases and stuff in the region, including Turkey and including Kuwait, and including, they basically were kind of saying, hey, you know, we're afraid of retaliation. Which didn't help him in any case because the Iranians, you know, attacked them. But I think that, you know, it's understandable, you know, wanting to play, but they're not in the same league, let's say, as playing the real politics and knowing when to push and when to drop back as compared to the Iranians, for example.
Yeah. No, completely different approach, that's for sure. Ellie, I want to talk to you about comments made by Rubio today. This against the background of the U.S. massing forces across the Middle East. And Rubio warns Iran's price will rise every night. Personally, I must tell you, I don't believe a word that they say anymore. What's your take on Rubio's stance?
Let's put it this way. There are a couple of things happening in the background in Washington, okay? First of all, there's Trump, who seems to say different contradictory things every other day. And he's the one who, at the end of the day, makes the final decisions. By the same token, you have a more hawkish Rubio, who seems to be more in the forefront now talking about what's happening in Iran, as opposed to the more non-interventionist, let's say, in Vance, who was, you know, spearheading the MOU and the peace talks, which are off the table. So I think the fact that you hear Rubio being more vocal and kind of taking the lead now about what's happening is, I think, showing the direction that America's going in.
Interesting.
Whether, you know, I think at the end of the day that Trump still would prefer, at least until after the midterm elections, I think he would prefer to have some kind of ongoing negotiation, at least. But since the Iranians are totally nuking anything, you know, from that MOU, it looks like they're just going to continue to, you know, the more, you know, as long as they don't call it return to war, even if they keep escalating and all that, it gets less press and everything than if it was America's back at war.
Well, that's interesting. You know?
So I think it's part of a way of how they're handling it, also vis-a-vis the implications in the press and stuff like that.
Such contradictory information coming out of different sources, depending what you read, obviously. But I happened to read something today, I don't remember where it was, but saying that regime change is back on the table as far as the Americans are concerned. They've realized who they're dealing with. They realize you can't trust a word they say. And they seem to be supportive of regime change again, which is fascinating because that's what the Israelis wanted from the get-go.
Well, let's put it this way. It's all a question of semantics. Regime change was something that was always on the table. And anybody who realized who Iran is and who's running Iran, it was obvious that's a necessity. And you can see it through all these negotiations. They're not budging an inch. You know, they want to keep ruling everything in Iran. They want to keep their extremist policies in place. So the only way to really rid the world of the Iranian, and it's not only rid the world, it's all, they're also, don't forget, a linchpin between Russia and China as well. So anybody who's playing the big game, and I think Trump certainly is playing that. If you take a look at why he did what he did in South America and Central America before Venezuela, and all that, it's part of the fact that you're not going to come out and say publicly, we're going for regime change and all that. But that's the end game at the end. I mean, and if it wasn't clear to people before, it's very clear to them right now, I think.
But that's a great segue to the fact that Israeli press reporting that Ramat Gan has apparently opened bomb shelters today, as the Iranian threat is no longer considered negligible. Is this now, have things ramped up to that extent in Israel that, let me ask the question differently. Has the vibe in Israel changed significantly in light of what Ramat Gan is doing?
I don't think the vibe has changed, you know, because we've been living with this for months and years even. I don't think the vibe has changed. You know, people are asking, am I going to be able to fly next week, abroad or something like that? Is the airport going to be closed or whatever? But that's the main question that's on. But I think that, you know, it's clear. By the way, it's not only Ramat Gan. It's a couple other cities, including Eilat and all that, who have also come out publicly and said that. But you can also see the fact that that they haven't really moved the air tankers, or at most are moving around from Ben Gurion to some other airports or whatever. But I think that things very clearly point to continuing strikes against Iran, and at some point they might just decide. I think that they've been trying to avoid attacking Israel because they know Israel's power and Israel's accuracy in hitting them. So they kind of are trying to do everything but strike Israel, I think. But at some point they might come and say, okay, Americans aren't backing off, so now we need to strike Israel, maybe, or whatever. Or, from their perspective, maybe it's, getting to a point where they might have to hit what's the doomsday button for them to finally extricate the lost Mahdi from where he's hiding.
Oh my goodness. So we're talking Islamic messianicism, which is a very powerful force to fight. Yesterday was a significant escalation when we saw them hitting desalination plants in the Gulf. I mean, considering the importance of water and the fact that they're now targets, that takes you into very, very dangerous territory. But Eli, we're out of time. Thank you so very much for chatting to us on Chai FM, and we will connect soon, I am sure.